Imagine spending like $68.7 billion to acquire this massive company, and then almost immediately turning around and firing the exact people who just built your most critically acclaimed, award-winning product.
Right. On a human level, it's completely devastating.
Yeah, and even purely on a business level, it makes absolutely zero logical sense.
Not at all.
But you know, that is exactly what Microsoft just did. So, welcome to today's deep dive. It is Monday, July 13th, 2026, and we are unpacking this really fascinating, comprehensive industry newsletter that just crossed our desks today.
Yeah, we've got a massive stack of source material here. It's detailing six basically completely disparate tech crises that have all just exploded over the last few days.
Right. And our mission today, as we go through this, is to figure out how these six distinct stories are actually all symptoms of the exact same underlying condition. We're calling it the tech inflection.
I like that term. Because it really is a critical inflection point. Across all these sources, we are seeing an industry that is fundamentally struggling. They're trying to balance this demand for growth at all costs with, basic sustainability,
Yeah.
system safety, and honestly, the human element of their workforce. The structural integrity of the tech world is being tested right now in ways I don't think we've seen in decades.
Absolutely. And by the time we finish this deep dive, you listening right now, you're going to understand the mechanics behind all of this. You'll understand why your favorite video game studio might have just closed down despite making a massive hit.
Yep.
Why former Apple engineers are allegedly smuggling unreleased batteries into job interview.
Which is still crazy to me.
It is wild. And why your supposedly impenetrable Mac might not be as secure as you think. So let's jump right into the gaming world first, specifically looking at Xbox, where we are seeing the raw human cost of massive corporate scale. The newsletter highlights the situation that just blew up on July 11. An Xbox fan named Whit Yao posted on the Xbox Player Voice Forum, which, if you don't know, is Microsoft's official feedback site.
Right, yeah.
And he was demanding an end to the company's layoffs and studio closures.
Which is really notable because, generally speaking, a single forum post by a fan is just, it's a drop in the ocean.
Oh, yeah, usually they get totally ignored.
Exactly. But this specific post became a lightning rod. I mean, it garnered over 3,000 votes in just 48 hours. It completely dominated the feedback site, basically forcing Microsoft to visibly confront their own community, who are actively turning against their corporate strategy.
And honestly, when you look at the raw math in our sources, you completely understand why the community is so furious. The newsletter details 3,200 new layoffs hitting Xbox.
Yeah.
That breaks down to 1,600 people losing their jobs immediately, and another 1,600 planned for June 2027.
It was just brutal pacing.
It is. And when you zoom out, this culminates in over 10,000 lost jobs in just under 2.5 years, all following Microsoft's massive $68.7 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard.
Right. And the sheer scale of that number, it really requires some context. When a corporation spends nearly $70 billion on an acquisition, they take on this immense burden to prove immediate financial justification to their shareholders.
Right, they have to pay that bill.
Exactly. The debt and the pressure of that acquisition force this pivot toward an immediate mass profitability model. A game can't just be a solid, profitable hit anymore, It has to be a financial juggernaut that moves the needle on a $70 billion spreadsheet, or the studio just gets cut.
And that leads to, honestly, the most baffling part of the source material, because the prime example of this fallout is Tango Gameworks. They're the studio that created the game Hi-Fi Rush.
Oh, right. Such a good game.
It was. Now, Hi-Fi Rush was a massive, unexpected hit. It received universal critical acclaim. It won multiple industry awards. Players loved it.
Everyone loved it.
And yet, Tango Gameworks was shuttered.
I look at this and my mind goes to analogy. It feels like Microsoft bought a colossal, unbelievable luxury mansion, that's Activision, and then immediately fired the housekeeping staff, the plumbers, and the electricians just to make the mortgage payment.
Yeah.
It is a completely unsustainable way to manage growth.
I would actually push that analogy a step further, to be honest.
Okay, how so?
It's worse than firing the housekeeping staff. In the gaming industry, these studios are the people actually building the furniture and constructing the house itself. You are firing the creators. The boardroom is demanding short-term shareholder returns, and to achieve that, they're actively dismantling their own creative pipeline.
Wow, yeah. That is spot on. But, the source material doesn't just leave us with that depressing reality. It actually offers this incredible, stark contrast. Right alongside the Xbox fire, there is a very different strategy playing out at Disney.
Right, yeah.
On August 15th at the D23 2026 event, they are hosting a one-hour panel titled Deep Dive into Kingdom Hearts, which is just a celebration of a 25-year-old franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And economically, Kingdom Hearts represents the absolute antithesis of the modern Xbox situation.
Completely.
This is a series that has sold over 36 million copies globally, and it completely defies the modern live service trends that are just dominating the industry right now.
Exactly. And, you know, when we say live service, we mean games that are designed to extract money from you perpetually. So Kingdom Hearts has no battle passes, no endless microtransactions, no daily login bonuses designed to create a behavioral addiction.
Yeah, the Kingdom Hearts model proves that traditional, patient, single-player game design remains a highly viable business model.
Yeah, it really does.
Square Enix and Disney, they often take an immense amount of time, I mean, sometimes over a decade between mainline releases.
Mm-hmm.
But when the product releases, it is a complete finished experience.
Right. You buy it and you own the whole thing.
Exactly. It relies on the inherent quality of the game to drive massive initial sales rather than drip-feeding content to monetize a captive audience over 5 years. It inherently respects both the player's time and the developer's craft.
So as you are listening to this, I really want you to consider how your own entertainment diet is being shaped by these unseen boardroom mechanics. Because when a studio like Tango gets closed despite making a literal masterpiece, it sends a chilling message.
It really does.
It means your future entertainment isn't being dictated by what is genuinely fun or innovative or creatively daring. It's being dictated by an algorithm of immediate, massive profitability.
And that exact anxiety, you know, the creeping realization that human creativity and human labor are increasingly viewed as just expendable resources for a corporation's bottom line, that is not a sentiment contained only to the gaming industry.
It absolutely is not. And I think that is the perfect lens to view the next major section of our source material. Because this profound anxiety over human obsolescence, it's currently spilling out of the corporate forums and directly into the physical streets. And into the courts, honestly, over artificial intelligence.
Yeah, the AI frontier is operating in a state of rapid, almost completely unregulated expansion. And the social tension surrounding it is finally snapping.
Now, looking at these protests we're about to discuss, I do want to make one thing super clear. Our goal today isn't to pick sides or tell you who is right, whether it's the tech giants pushing the boundaries of innovation or the protesters marching in the streets.
Right.
We are just here to unpack the raw facts from the newsletter and understand the mechanisms of the arguments being made by both sides. We're totally impartial here.
Which is a necessary framework because the friction here is palpable. According to the reporting, on Saturday, July 12th, San Francisco experienced the largest anti-AI demonstration in U.S. history.
Yeah, the sources state that between 200 and 400 people marched directly on the headquarters of three major players, OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google DeepMind.
Yep.
And the newsletter breaks their grievances down into three specific categories: safety, jobs, and the environment.
Right.
Let's look at the safety aspect first, because they highlight a specific instance of GPT-4 teaching itself to code without explicit programming. Now, I need you to explain this to me, because how does an AI teach itself a skill if a human engineer didn't write the code for it to do that?
Right. So that is what researchers call emergent behavior. And it is exactly what terrifies the protesters.
Okay.
These large language models, they aren't programmed with a list of rules like traditional software. They are fed massive amounts of data and they learn to predict patterns.
So they just sort of figure it out on their own?
Essentially, yeah. As the models get larger and process more data, they suddenly develop capabilities like complex coding or logical reasoning that their creators literally did not anticipate and cannot fully reverse engineer.
Oh, wow. So they don't even know how it works inside.
In a lot of cases, no. So the protesters are essentially asking, if you don't know how it taught itself to code, how can you confidently predict what else it might teach itself to do?
I mean, that is a very fair question. And that lack of predictability ties directly into their second grievance, job displacement. The tech industry has seen 150,000 layoffs in 2026 alone, with the protesters linking a significant portion of those to AI automation.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering.
But honestly, it was the third grievance, the environmental data in our source, that completely stopped me in my tracks.
Oh, the energy consumption.
Yes. The newsletter reports that Google DeepMind's data centers consumed 2.5 terawatt hours of electricity in 2025.
Yeah. And just to contextualize that number, 2.5 terawatt hours is enough electricity to power a city of roughly 500,000 people for an entire year.
That is insane.
Yeah, and that is the energy footprint for just one company's AI training infrastructure.
Okay, hold on. Let me play devil's advocate for a second here. Whenever tech companies scale up new infrastructure, it uses massive amounts of power. I mean, think back to the early days of cloud computing or streaming video. Why is the AI energy draw uniquely dangerous, as the protesters claim?
Well, it really comes down to the computational intensity of the mechanism itself. So, serving a web page or streaming a movie from a cloud server, that's a relatively simple, low-energy retrieval task.
Right, it's just fetching data.
Exactly. But AI fundamentally operates differently. When you ask a chatbot a question, it isn't just looking up a pre-written answer. It is calculating billions of probability parameters in real time to generate every single word it outputs.
Oh, I see.
So the computational friction is exponentially higher. Every time you ask an AI to write an email or generate an image, you're tapping into a localized grid that requires massive cooling systems and specialized processors, drawing power at a rate traditional data centers never even approached.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, but I also want to look at the specific companies they targeted in these protests. They marched on Anthropic.
Yes, they did.
And if Anthropic's entire brand, their core public identity, is built on being the quote-unquote safe AI company, doesn't participating in this frantic, energy-guzzling arms race inherently negate their safety credentials? I mean, can you really claim to be the safe driver if you are willingly participating in an unregulated drag race?
And that right there is the core philosophical paradox the protesters are highlighting.
Yeah.
The argument is that when your underlying business model relies on constantly pushing technical boundaries just to stay relevant against, say, OpenAI and Google, safety procedures inevitably become secondary friction points.
They just get in the way.
Right. You can have the most robust ethics board in the world, but the velocity of the race itself becomes the primary danger.
And when you look at the tactics being used in this race, they are becoming shockingly aggressive. The newsletter shifts from the streets to the courts here, detailing these explosive new filings in Apple's lawsuit against OpenAI.
Oh, this part is fascinating.
We are talking about corporate espionage. That sounds like it's straight out of a movie script.
The allegations are truly remarkable. The filings center on a former Apple engineer named Cheng Liu,
Right.
and he allegedly exploited a linkering system bug to maintain access to Apple's confidential servers for weeks after his employment was terminated.
Just casually logging in after being fired.
Yeah, and he allegedly took his Apple-issued laptop, which was loaded with proprietary circuit diagrams, directly to OpenAI.
Unbelievable. But you know, the detail that really highlights the sheer desperation of this arms race involves OpenAI's chief hardware officer, Tang Tan.
Yes.
According to the court documents, Tan was allegedly asking interview candidates to bring unreleased Apple parts, specifically unreleased batteries and logic boards, into their job interviews at OpenAI as a literal show and tell
It's
exercise.
so brazen.
Why would a software company like OpenAI be so desperate for Apple's physical battery technology? I just don't get it.
Well, because they realize that whoever controls the hardware controls the future distribution of AI.
Oh.
OpenAI has actively hired over 400 former Apple employees.
400.
Yeah. They even acquired the design studio of Jony Ive, the legendary former Apple designer. So, Apple isn't pursuing this lawsuit just because they're mad about a stolen logic board.
Right, it's bigger than that.
They are reacting to an existential threat. OpenAI is attempting to build a world-class hardware division from scratch, using Apple's talent to create an AI-first physical device that could eventually render the iPhone completely obsolete.
So this lawsuit is essentially Apple throwing legal sand in the gears to slow OpenAI down.
Precisely. It is strategic defensive friction.
Which brings us to the most concerning part of this entire deep dive, because while Apple is pouring vast legal and financial resources into playing defense against OpenAI's hardware poaching,
Yeah.
and while Microsoft is distracted by their studio closures, you have to wonder who is actually watching the store. Because while these tech giants are fighting multi-billion dollar futuristic wars, their fundamental security perimeters are being breached today.
Yeah, the blind spots in our current digital infrastructure are glaring. And the source material provides two terrifying examples of how fragile the foundation really is.
Right. So on July 13th, researchers at Jamf Threat Labs discovered a highly sophisticated new piece of macOS malware dubbed Crash Stealer.
And we need to be really clear here. This is not your standard run-of-the-mill adware that you accidentally download by clicking a bad link.
Right. This isn't just pop-ups.
No, this is targeted, highly engineered intrusion software.
Because it completely bypassed Apple's Gatekeeper security system. Now, if you don't know, Gatekeeper is the built-in macOS software designed to stop unverified apps from running.
Give it a second.
And Crash Dealer bypassed it because it was actually officially notarized by Apple. It utilized a valid developer ID, Emil Grigorov, WWB7J7AQV. Let's use an analogy here. Gatekeeper is basically a bouncer at an exclusive club, right? Checking IDs. This malware didn't try to sneak in through the kitchen or pick the lock on the back door.
No, it didn't have to.
It walked right up to the front and handed the bouncer a mathematically flawless Apple-issued VIP passport. The system didn't fail to check the ID. The system was fundamentally tricked into trusting a malicious credential.
That is exactly the mechanism at play. Once an app is cryptographically notarized, macOS inherently trusts it. Furthermore, the newsletter notes that Crash Stealer is written entirely in native C++ Joy.
Okay, why does the programming language matter? Like, why does native C++ make it stealthier?
Well, most modern malware uses higher-level languages or relies on virtual environments, which modern security scanners can easily monitor for suspicious behavior.
Okay.
Native C++ compiles directly down to the machine code level. It interacts directly with the computer's processor and memory without a middleman.
So it's just whispering right into the computer's ear.
Basically, yeah. Because of that, it operates with incredible speed and can blend in seamlessly with legitimate system processes. That makes it extremely difficult for high-level security tools to detect its presence before the damage is already done.
And its deployment tactic is perfectly designed to exploit human psychology. It hides the initial payload behind a fake meeting Pinon prompt.
Right. So clever.
So an automated security scanner looks at it and just sees a harmless meeting request, while the human user types in their password thinking they're joining a conference call.
Yeah.
And once it is in, the scope of what it steals is staggering. The newsletter states it targets 80 different cryptocurrency wallets. It infiltrates 14 different password managers, including major widely used ones like 1Password and LastPass.
To paraphrase.
And it drains the macOS keychain, which holds all your system passwords.
And worse, it also encrypts all of that stolen data locally before transmitting it back to the attacker. Which means even if your company has network monitors watching the traffic, they can't see what data is being exfiltrated.
Oh, wow. Wait, before we move on to the next threat, the text mentions that Crash Stealer installs itself as a launch agent so it survives a reboot. I use a Mac every day, and I have no idea what a launch agent is. How does that work?
So a launch agent is a legitimate background mechanism built into macOS.
Okay.
It is basically a set of instructions that tells the operating system, every time this specific user logs in, automatically start this program in the background. Good apps use it to check for updates or, you know, sync your cloud files.
So the malware just poses as one of those.
Right. Crash Stealer embeds itself into that specific system folder. So even if you suspect you have a virus and you restart your computer to clear your active memory, the operating system itself actively restarts the malware the second you log back in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It ensures total persistence.
That is incredibly unsettling. But macOS isn't the only foundational infrastructure crumbling right now, according to the source. The newsletter also details an emergency warning issued on July 12 by CISA, the primary U.S. cybersecurity agency. They flagged two massive vulnerabilities in Joomla web extensions, specifically tools called Ikagenda and Balboa Forms. Now, Joomla powers millions of websites globally, and the source states these have a CVSS score of 10.0, and they are zero-day vulnerabilities.
Yeah, that's about as bad as it gets.
So break that terminology down for us. What exactly is a CVSS 10.0, and what makes it a zero-day?
Well, CVSS stands for the Common Vulnerability Scoring System. It is the industry standard for rating the severity of a software flaw on a scale from 0 to 10.
Okay.
A score of 10.0 is the absolute worst-case scenario.
Like it.
Yeah. It generally means the vulnerability can be exploited over the internet, requires absolutely zero authentication or passwords, and requires no interaction from the victim.
So they don't even have to trick you into clicking a link.
Exactly. An attacker can essentially point a script at a web server and take complete administrative control.
Wow.
And it is called a zero day because the software vendor had 0 days of advance notice to fix it before hackers started actively using it in the wild.
And according to the newsletter, these specific vulnerabilities have been actively exploited by attackers since mid-June, meaning these servers have been silently compromised for weeks while the tech industry was just looking the other way.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of everything we've discussed today, the real meaning behind this tech inflection.
Right. Because the irony tying all these sources together is profound.
Yeah.
We are observing an industry that is pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into building hyper-advanced emergent AI systems while simultaneously launching massive legal battles to steal hardware secrets to control the future.
All of that high-level futuristic stuff.
Exactly. Yet our foundational digital infrastructure, the operating system sitting on our desks and the web servers routing our daily internet traffic, remains astonishingly fragile.
You know, it is crucial to remember that these aren't just abstract corporate case studies happening in a vacuum. These overlapping crises directly impact you. It is your one password vault containing your bank logins. It is your personal documents sitting on a server that might be silently compromised. It is your entertainment ecosystem being stripped of its creative talent to pay for a massive corporate acquisition.
The tech giants are aggressively building a shiny, futuristic penthouse, but they are willfully ignoring the fact that the foundation holding the whole thing up is actively cracking under the strain.
Right.
Innovation is currently outrunning both safety and sustainability, leaving this trail of laid-off workers, anxious communities, and massive security voids in its wake.
The data clearly shows an ecosystem pushed to absolute limits. The tension between the demand for infinite growth and the reality of finite resources, whether that resource is human talent, electrical power, or just security bandwidth, it's reaching a breaking point.
It really is.
Which leaves me with a final thought for you to explore on your own today.
Okay.
As this technology race gets faster, more chaotic, and frankly, more invasive into our daily lives, will we eventually see the cultural rise of a slow tech movement?
Oh, that's an interesting concept.
Right. Think about it. A couple of decades ago, the slow food movement emerged as a direct pushback against the fast food industry. They were demanding sustainability, transparent sourcing, and a return to human connection.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Will consumers soon reach a saturation point and start paying a premium for technology that is deliberately slower? Will we see a market for devices that are intentionally disconnected from the frantic AI arms race? Devices fundamentally focused on absolute human privacy and built with patient, stable code that doesn't require a daily patch just to stop a catastrophic hack.
I could definitely see a market for that.
Because right now, the sheer velocity of the tech industry seems entirely unsustainable. We love unpacking these deep dives and figuring out what these massive shifts mean for you. Keep questioning the tools you use every day, stay secure out there, and we will catch you next time.